kwakuwankwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu ata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios at an altitude of 1,998 feet above the savannah, and joining me from somewhere in the world, our very own intrepid explorer, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Good, Dave. I'm at Rogers Island. Do you know where that is?
It sounds like Canada.
No, it's not near anywhere near Canada. It's near Mananara. Do you know where Mananara is?
That's not near Canada.
Taking shot or no?
No, I'll just be Googling it by the time I come up with a shot.
We are in Madagascar studying the eye-eye. The eye-eye is a nocturnal lemur that kind of looks like a demon. It's a very bizarre-looking animal.
It is one of the coolest animals in the world, and I should have known this.
Awesome. And it's not only is it famous for just its bizarre demon-like looks and big yellow eyes, but it also has a very long middle finger,
yes,
which is not used for any type of untoward gestures, but instead is used... Go ahead, what?
Pokes into the bark of the tree like a woodpecker.
Exactly right.
See, I know these things!
It taps the wood just like a woodpecker would with its beak, and then breaks open a little hole and digs out the grubs. Correct.
They are considered, like, some of the most hauntingly ugly animals in the world, right? Because they have these glowing eyes, and they're nocturnal, but they're really cool.
One of the other interesting things about them is about 30 years ago, scientists thought that they were essentially virtually extinct. They estimated that there was only about 50 of them. Well, as they did a little bit more examination, it turns out it's one of the more widespread lemurs in all of Madagascar. It's doing relatively okay. It's still, it's in danger, but it's doing a lot better than 50 or so animals.
Well, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong. Madagascar is, in my mind, something like the Galapagos. It is its own ecosystem with its own sort of isolated species. But the difference is that Madagascar is populated.
Right. Right,
so
right.
As the population grows and searches for ways to sustain themselves, all of the species in Madagascar are essentially in some sort of danger.
That's correct. Yeah, there's a lot of deforestation and habitat destruction, overhunting. I mean, it's been going on. It's a relatively poor country, so there's no real way to curtail it. But yes, most of the things are at least in some sort of danger.
And it's a real sort of cool evolutionary study, if I'm not mistaken, as well, because you have where on the African mainland, primates developed into things like monkeys and gorillas. On Madagascar, they've developed into these lemurs of all different sizes and shapes. And there are some that I think can fit like in the palm of your hand. They're so small.
Yeah, there are some that are very small. They are very primitive types of primates. When Madagascar broke off, this primitive type of primate was there, and it didn't evolve like some of the other primates in the mainland. So yes, it's a lot like Australia in certain ways.
Right, right. But at a much smaller scale.
Correct.
Gotta pat the host on the back for knowing as much as he did there. I don't know why I couldn't think of Rogers Island. As soon as you said Madagascar, I was like, yes, I should have known that. I just actually saw a TV show about this. That's why I know. About the eye-eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fascinating show. Anyway.
You ever seen an eye-eye for real, Dave?
Have I? I don't know.
They used to have them in the Bronx Zoo.
I don't remember seeing that, if I did. I might have.
You might have.
Might have, but I don't. When I saw it, it didn't ring any bells. When I saw it on the show that I just saw in the last few weeks. On this show, we are going to discuss the news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. And then in our feature segment, This could be the first of many that go along in a series of feature segments. We are going to turn the show over to our listeners and our readers of JomboEveryone.com and take your questions, which we asked for earlier in the week. And in a two-day period, we literally were flooded with these questions. So we have a ton of great topics to go through. Some of them we're going to do tonight. Some of them we might do in the next show. Some may even have their own show. But all of them are going to be put into the hat for the drawing for the next Buridika Band CD, of which I still have a few to give away. And those of you, this is something that's going to come as a surprise, those of you who entered into this contest, I'm actually going to draw two names from this. And just a quick note on that, Mike, before we get into the local news, for those of you who I have already contacted that have won and have not yet received your discs from previous contests, sit tight. They are coming. I was away from the country for a little while there, and I will be getting to that in the coming days, so you should get yours soon. Let's begin the local news, shall we? And
sure,
the first one is, according to information gathered by the famous Keith, and I'm going to mention Jamie of the Disney Hipsters, even though Jamie likes to forget about me whenever she mentions us on her show, a new Komodo dragon who is on loan from Zoo Miami, we hear, for the summer, is now on stage at the Maharaja Jungle Trek. And Mike, we know this one is on loan, but from what you understand, there is going to be more permanent members of this group, correct?
Correct. So this one is on loan from the Miami Zoo. I'm not even sure if it's a male or female, but that animal is going to be there to the end of the summer, supposedly. It's about 16 years old, so it's an older animal. Well, not incredibly old, but, you know, up there. And weighs about 130 pounds. Now, the ones they're getting, and they're hopefully to get them towards the end of the summer, is three animals, two males, both of which are relatively young and are actually less than 40 pounds, according to the information we got from Keith and Jamie, and a female. It'll be the female that will be on exhibit because the males are so small they're concerned that they might somehow be able to get out of the exhibit. It's designed for larger Komodos. But the most important thing for all of us is that this is going to be hopefully a breeding group. So the three that they will eventually have, hopefully will have little baby Komodos somewhere down the road.
Now, Mike, my only experience with Komodo dragons in zoos really is at the Animal Kingdom. And there's only ever really been one there. Now, is this a solitary animal that are we always going to see just one at a time on display, or is this, could we see all three at one point in time?
They tend to keep them solitary out on the exhibit, yes. In the wild, they are less so, especially when you get to, you know, they're almost like, and you know, I'm not sounding like a real biologist here, but for the layperson, they sound almost like grizzly bears. So when there's like a large animal that's dead and there's carrion, they will congregate, and there will be a pecking order, kind of. They won't get into too much of a vicious fights or anything like that.
Right.
But other than that, they're generally solitary.
So we'll see how that ends up. But that's exciting because we had that Komodo there for a while, and we were hoping they would bring a new one in, and it looks like they're going even further and getting into sort of a species survival thing here.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. The next piece of information I have, this was actually on the Parks blog just today, and I'm sure most of you know that it's coming, as is tradition. Disney will celebrate Earth Day on April 22nd with their Party for the Planet, something they do every year pretty much, and never wanting to miss a chance to cross-promote with another property. The party will go hand-in-hand with the release of the Disney nature film Bears. Now, not to sound too snarky, but pretty much every year around this time, Disney Nature produces a film, and pretty much every time they incorporate it into this Party for the Planet.
Right.
There's the standard things that you see in most of these kind of celebrations, face painting, different informational kiosks, really cool stuff. Happens all over the park, a lot of it at Rafiki's Planet Watch. But the other kind of addition here is that, according to the blog, the Disney Parks blog, and I'm quoting them here, special merchandise will be available at locations throughout the Animal Kingdom, and through April 30th, a safari-costumed Duffy the Disney Bear,
oh yes,
will be sold at Disney's Animal Kingdom. $1, one whole dollar from each sale will be donated to the National Park Foundation through Disney Wildlife Conservation Fund to celebrate Disney nature bears. I'm glad they're donating at least a dollar. I was hoping for a bit more, but we can live with that.
And for how long is the Duffy and Safari outfit on sale for?
It says through April 30th.
Oh, through April 30th.
So right. I guess from the 22nd or perhaps even earlier through April 30th. So I have a feeling it'll be on sale, Mike, until they're all sold.
Yeah, probably.
But it's usually a cool thing. And if you're there around Earth Day, it's always nice. I know a lot of locals I hear tend to go there on that day. It's kind of a neat little celebration they do. So don't miss it. The next thing, how about, for a change, some great news for Disney Vacation Club members.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been getting a little aggravated with certain things at the Disney Vacation Club. But really, you don't get much better than this other than they're going to give you something for free. the Sunrise Safari, the very popular, very well-reviewed Sunrise Safari, will be now open to any DVC member staying in the Animal Kingdom villas. I mean, for years, this tour was, like I said, which was very popular, was only open to people staying at the concierge level at the lodge. Most of us without the ability to afford such lush accommodations were not able to enjoy this safari. But that seems to have changed, and at least now it's open to a few more folks. Mike, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm going to start looking into this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm now changing my thinking about when I'm going to be down there next and if I can coincide something with that day so I can be there. So I would.
What day is it again?
I think it takes place on Thursdays and Sundays.
Okay.
So we'll discuss that off air. But people you got to be excited about this. If you're a DVC member, if you're a Kidani Village a frequenter like Mike and I are, you know, it's $75. That's a standard cost. I believe it's $75, or at least it is now. Who knows if it's going to change as a result of this. It's $75 for an adult. That's about what every tour goes for. Those of you who don't know what the Sunrise Safari is all about, it's exactly that, right? You get up at the crack of dawn and you get basically a private tour of the Kilimanjaro Safaris, where they stop and take you through you know, the different exhibits. You get a lot of chance at photographs. I mean, if you're an animal lover like the two of us are, and you have not been able to afford the concierge level, this is an opportunity. And Mike, we know people who would stay just at the concierge level, even just for a night, so they can do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a great little addition to the Animal Kingdom DVC members.
And you get breakfast at Pizzafari, if I'm not mistaken.
You get breakfast at Pizzafari. Yep, that's included as well. So it's a great little piece of news. Made my day this morning when I read that.
when you consider how much the Wild Africa Trek is, which is about $200, and this is $75. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, in comparison, it's a good deal.
Absolutely. And Mike, since I gushed about the Sunrise Safari, I now want to give you a chance to rejoice over some Tamu Tamu news.
Oh yes, well the old as. You know, we had reported before it actually happened. We got word that the menu is changing back to the old menu, which includes the pulled beef in pita with the cucumber mint sauce. And it includes, what was the other thing that it, oh, the quinoa salad.
Right.
That was very good. And perhaps most importantly, those house-made potato chips are back too. So all of that, which is very strange that they would go back to this. All of that is coming back. And the reason I say it's strange is the whole concept of switching it to the curry and rice thing was so that you can easily dole out stuff in bowls very fast to accommodate large groups of people coming out of Festival of the Lion King. Now, why they would switch back before that opened, I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the reason they switched. I don't know. I guess only time will tell.
Maybe there's going to be an eatery over there.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Well, let's move on to that subject, because it seems okay. That a regular segment on these days on our local news is a Festival of the Lion King construction update via the website OrlandoParkNews.com. We seem to do this every week we do a show. And since we're on this sort of Harambe area, let's begin with this, Mike. We have the latest group of photos. I love I don't know who this guy is or girl who does this. They absolutely do not care about sticking their camera up over these walls and taking just a mass amount of pictures. And I'm sure they're only showing us the good ones.
Right. They right,
probably
right.
have dozens more.
Yeah, I'm sure they can't sit there and like focus. So they probably take like 150 photos and.
And you get whatever the clearest ones are. But this week, Mike, we have a real look into the aesthetics and the theming of the new theater and the surrounding areas, but really the theater. I mean, the theater itself, see if you agree, is shaping up to be what just looks like a stunning piece of architecture that goes right into the concept of the old forts and the old Sultan palaces that dot the coast of Kenya and Tanzania. I mean, it just looks fantastic for what we're seeing here.
It just reminded me, just looking at it, reminded me of the area behind Tamu Tamu, just on a much grander scale.
Right.
That kind of dilapidated fort, like falling apart with kind of look to it. And then they also have really extended out the sort of like the fort kind of aspect along the river, too. The wall that goes along the river really looks good.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't have answers to some of the questions. For instance, there's a couple of random buildings there that we're still not quite sure what they are. They don't seem, you know, we don't seem to have much of a change in that yet. But we do see a major, major change to the facade of the Lion King Theater. That is the big news here. For those of you, I mean, when I was talking about the forts and things along the coast of Kenya and Tanzania, for those of you interested, Mike did a great sort of backstory article, actually more than one, a couple of articles. I think I've did part of it too. We did a history of Harambe
right.
in that area. So it's on jomboeveryone.com. Go to the blog section, search for the history of Harambe, and you'll find all that. And you'll see what we mean by how this all sort of fits in. They're even matching the flooring, which I think we were talking about last time as well. But it's starting to get exciting.
And it looks, and that building that we talked about last time with the hipsters, the building that looks like it's a couple of stories.
Correct.
Kind of off to the left. They've added more of that kind of rooftop kind of stuff to it. If you look real close,
mm-hmm.
there's another like gazebo looking thing on top of it. So now it looks like the whole roof is covered. So I'm really wondering if that's seating up there for like some sort of counter service.
Yeah, we still don't know.
And I would, from what I'm understanding, is when Camp Minnie Mickey closed, a couple of things closed with it that have not reopened. And that is a stand that sold funnel cakes and a place to get hot dogs, just, you know, hot dogs, and which are in high demand in a theme park.
especially running a kids show.
When they go to theme parks, they want hot dogs and funnel cakes. I mean, that just goes hand in hand. So don't be surprised if there are those stands reopen when Festival Lion King opens over there somewhere.
Hot dogs and funnel cakes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really themed, but we could talk about maybe themed later. But but I wouldn't. I mean, you still have to sell the basics: hot dogs, funnel cakes, ice cream. Even though that doesn't really fit into the theme of Africa, they're still going to sell it.
Yeah,
don't be surprised if it's there.
Right, and it's kid related stuff that's next to a giant kid show. So it makes, you know, or a family friendly show, and you know, those kind of things. You know, kids want ice cream, kids want hot dogs.
And there's other kid-related stuff that I've heard about Harambe, if you want me to go on to that.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, but before we move on, I just want to say we also are hearing that the theater itself could open as early as late May and early June. So this is going to pick up speed here, I think. And every time we take a show, and every time the guy at OrlandoParkNews.com sticks his camera over there, I think we're going to start to see some major changes each and every time.
And I think pretty soon, I would imagine sooner or later, Disney Parks blog is going to put something that gives you some indication of what's going on. Because what I've heard is, and we put this on the website, is that the show's not going to be the same.
Right.
And that it's going to be new floats. That's what I've heard.
Right. Very cool. Now let's move on to I think what you were referencing, which we'll consider a rumor, which is a couple of weeks ago, right after actually, Mike, I think right after we recorded the last show, you brought to my attention one of these rumors regarding work being done behind the Mombasa marketplace.
That's actually not what I was referring to.
Okay, so let's do this one first, and we'll go back.
Okay.
This is something that the Mombasa marketplace, the work going on behind the Mombasa marketplace, is something that you've been really curious about for some time. You've kind of heard rumblings. There's not a lot of information that's been released, certainly nothing from Disney even acknowledging that work is going on back there. But we've all been under the impression that something is, and now we may know what's going on, correct?
Yeah, from what I understand is that, and a lot of people are thinking that this is merely a path that goes from Africa to Asia, another place to get there without going along the river. But what I'm understanding is that there's going to be additional counter services there. And what I've been told that it's going to look, or not look, but have kind of the same functional capacity idea behind the Sunset Ranch over in Hollywood Studios. And if for people who don't know what that is, that's the area by Tower of Terror where they kind of have three or four smaller, I don't know what you would call them, almost like kiosks. One that sells kind of barbecue, another one that sells, you know, chicken fingers and burgers, and another one, you know, whatever. There's like three or four of them, and they're all kind of like, it's almost like a little marketplace.
Right.
And there's plenty of seating and stuff like that. So I'm hearing that is going to go, there's going to be something like that there in that area behind Mombasa. So it would actually, and probably make its way all the way down to the path. So it would go from like where you would walk towards Pangani and, you know, the train,
uh-huh.
That path, you can enter it that way. And it would go all the way over to, you know, basically the path leading out towards, you know, Tamu Tamu, like next to that.
Okay. So before Bradley Falls, but correct. After Tamu Tamu.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's my understanding. Again, this is only rumors, but they're strong ones.
Well, and if they're going to do, if they're going to theme it to an open air market, that would fit right in with
right.
with that area. I mean, that area of Africa is filled with open air markets. I mean, it's just, it would be perfect. That would be.
And there is a lot of space there to occupy.
Yes, there is. And this is an exciting rumor. Again, we're waiting to hear more about this. Now, what were you going to mention?
Now, before we move on to that, though, don't expect that to open anytime in the immediate future. That's not something that's going to open with Festival of the Lion King.
Okay.
I mean, that's something that's probably past Christmas, maybe next year.
Okay.
What I was going to mention was actually back to the Festival of the Lion King. I am hearing that there is going to be finally some Festival of the Lion King specific merchandise. And the one thing I've heard for sure is that there's going to be one of those souvenir Festival of the Lion King mugs you'll be able to get at Tamu Tamu that you see all over the place. So be on the lookout. I'm assuming they'll start rolling that out pretty soon. I'm sure there'll be a store over by Festival of the Lion King that sells this kind of stuff.
And maybe they have to update the CD too if they change some of the music around.
Maybe.
So stay tuned. We're hearing more stuff every day. Starting to get closer. That is it for the local news. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, Safari Mike will give us the world news. Coming back in just a second on Radio Harambe.
Come on, gang. Let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JumboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news, and with that, as always, very own Safari Mike. Mike, what do we got this week?
Well, not too much. We're going to go to a galaxy far, far away, and we're going to go with a green frog around the world. But first, let's talk about your favorite subject, my favorite subject, and the one that everybody seems to love so much, FastPass Plus. Tom Staggs actually announced this on the Disney Parks blog. Expect some, I'm going to call them improvements to the FastPass Plus. I think they are. One is, and the one thing we've been clamoring about since the beginning, you'll be able to finally get the ability to park hop. So if you have a park hopper pass of some type, whether that's an annual pass or the park hopping, add-on to it, you'll be able to book reservations for more than just one park a day.
I would think that would have been the biggest complaint for people with this, other than the fact that it just generally didn't work very well. But as far as just the plan behind it, that was the universal belly aching was over that.
Well, it was ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to spend the money, what is it, $50, $60 for a park hop to add on to that?
Right.
You're not going to be able to do that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
But anyway, so they're apparently going to fix that.
Good.
The other thing that they're quote unquote fixing is the ability to add additional fast passes. So how will this work? There are apparently doing polls and surveys and stuff like that, and I've heard various different rumors. One of them is once you've finished your third fast pass of the day, you'll be able to add another one. And then when you use that one, you add another one. It almost turns into the old fast pass system once you've used your three. Another thing I've heard is like after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll be able to add one. Another one that I've heard was, they're bandying about different ideas. Another one that I've heard is that you'll always be able to have three, so that once you use your first one, you'll be able to get another one. Now, obviously, it's all subject to how many are left, and don't expect to be able to get a Soarin' fast pass 3 o'clock in the afternoon when your three are done. The only place to me that this really is a factor is the Magic Kingdom, because they're still tiering you at Epcot, and they're still tiering you at Hollywood Studios, as far as I know. So you won't be able to, still won't be able to do Soarin and then Test Track later in the afternoon. So, but the Magic Kingdom, it certainly needs additional fast passes, and you'll have the ability to do that.
Yeah, I would.
And the other thing they've announced is that day guests and annual pass holders will now be able to book in advance. Up until now, they had to do it on the day that they get there, which has been caused nightmares with the FastPass Plus kiosks. It's just not really meant to handle all those day guests. But now you'll be able to book them 30 days in advance. Now, if you want additional fast passes, so if you use your three for the day and you want to get a fourth one, apparently you're going to have to be able to do that at a kiosk as opposed to your app, or your phone, or whatever. But we'll see if that changes. So they're tweaking this for sure.
Could only get better.
I like FastPass Plus. I know it didn't work for you. It worked okay for me. I didn't do it during the tiers.
Listen.
So it really kind of screws up Epcot to me. But, I like being able to book it in advance. So,
if you could actually book what you wanted, when you wanted, in advance, regardless of some sort of nonsensical formula of, tiers and things like that, then yes, it would be good. My complaint from the beginning has been that the rollout was terrible. They've had numerous technical issues with it. It absolutely destroyed it when I was there. But that was a specific time. I'm willing to admit, and have been from the beginning, that they could only fix those things. Couldn't possibly stay that way. I just will maintain, no matter how good it gets, that of all the things in Walt Disney World that needed $1 billion plugged into it, FastPass was not one of them. And when we were talking, when we first heard about what you could possibly do with new technology that they were thinking of bringing, the rumors we were hearing about how you could have your, basically a video taken of you from the way that it would know where you are, there was so much possibility in what they were investing. And what did we get? We got a FastPass system that really isn't as friendly as the original FastPass system. And even if it is, it only is for one or two rides a day. It just, no matter what they do with this system, unless they completely revolutionize it and blow me away with some new experience, it just wasn't worth the investment or time to me. That's my complaint.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have said to me at the beginning, all right, we have $1 billion, let's either do this FastPass Plus thing or, you know, add two countries to Epcot and do Star Wars Land. I mean, of course you're going to pick. That's the latter, of course.
And we all would.
Everybody would.
We all would. Yeah.
Everybody. The biggest problem I have with it is that it seems to be screwing up some of the rides that never needed. I mean, you're forcing people, for example, in Epcot, you know, you'd pick either Soarin' or Test Track, and now you have to have, you can't just pick one FastPass, you have to pick three. So now people are picking Spaceship Earth and, you know, whatever, Listen to the Land or whatever. And now Spaceship Earth is getting lines that it never had before. Haunted Mansion is getting lines that it never had before because it never had FastPass before because you didn't need it before. But now you're forcing people to take additional FastPasses, you know, for whatever it is. Like, Spaceship Earth seems to be the poster child of this. I've seen numerous tweets and whatnot of people like, where is this line coming from? And it's because they're forcing people to take another FastPass and, you know, they're picking Spaceship Earth or whatever.
Exactly.
That's the biggest issue I have with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, no matter what, even if they fix those things, even if that stuff does get resolved, even if they do add these things and the changes that you're saying, it still isn't going to be worth the time and money, in my opinion. But that's just, that, I mean, that's just, there's nothing they can do about that. Anyway. So what's next?
Let's go to Epcot, where the Flower and Garden Festival is in full swing, and they've added a Muppets scavenger hunt around World Showcase. It's fairly low tech. You know, you just go around and you look for some, you know, things to you know, I guess they're like wanted posters for Constantine. I'm sure you know who Constantine is, don't you, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're trying to find, you're lying, aren't you? You're trying,
of course. But,
and you're trying to find Constantine and, you know, bring him in. You're one of the detectives like Sam Eagle or Ty Burrell were in the movie. And like I said, it's low tech. It takes about a half hour or so, but it's a fun little thing apparently that they're doing for the Flower and Garden Festival.
And the question will inevitably be, will more people do this than actually go to see the new Muppet movie?
I went to go see the new Muppet movie.
Did you like it?
I'll give it a B-.
So you didn't really like it?
It was okay.
It's okay.
Okay. The last movie, the one, the whatever it was called, I guess, was it called the Muppet movie? I don't even remember what it was. Mm-hmm. Was superior. It was a better movie.
Okay. It was funny. I will see it eventually.
It wasn't as funny. It was fine. It was, you know, a nice hour and a half. You know, it's more of a, you know, spend a couple of bucks, you know, get it on Netflix, or then I don't know if I would spend 15 or whatever it is now to go to a movie theater and watch. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was okay, but.
Well, that's my plan. And once it comes out, I can tell you what I think.
One more?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
All right. Let's go to Disney's Hollywood Studios Star Wars Weekends. They are actually doing character meals. Now, it's not just for the weekends. It's all week. So it's from May 4th to June 15th. And what you can do is you have a Star Wars Dine-In Galactic Breakfast at, of course, the Sci-Fi Dine-In Theater, which is more like served breakfast. And here you can meet people like Boba Fett, Greedo, Darth Vader, that kind of stuff. I don't know what the food's going to be, but it better be really good at $48 an adult and $30 for a child.
What?
Yes, for breakfast.
Oh.
But you do get to meet Greedo. So ask him who shot first, him or Han Solo, see what happens.
They absolutely must justify to me why they're charging $50 for a breakfast. This better be the best breakfast ever.
So you can meet Boba Fett and Darth Vader, that's why. I'm sure it's going to be family style, you know, runny eggs, Mickey waffles, and whatever. It's nothing going to be. Yeah, it's not going to be anything, you know, tremendous.
Your normal stuff.
Right. And you can get dinner at the Hollywood and Vine. And there you're going to meet Jedi Mickey. And, you know, and we've all seen the pictures of, you know, Mickey Mouse in the Jedi costume. And I guess Darth Goofy and Princess Leia Minnie Mouse will do, you know, character meal there. That one is $56. And you can If you've ever eaten at the Hollywood Vine, it is the worst. It literally is the worst buffet dinner, I think, on property. It's terrible. But you can also make it a fantastic dinner package for a few more bucks. So if you want to spend $60 a pop, you can meet Jedi Mickey and get a average seat at Fantasmic.
I mean, I think the concept of character meals using Star Wars in the Hollywood studios is a fabulous concept.
And I think, long overdue.
I think it's a great idea. I just, of course, always got to be making sure that the masses can't afford it and only, you know, certain people would be willing to. I mean, well, I guess that's what they call crowd control. I don't know.
Well, and it's only for about 6 weeks. You know, it's during the
time
period for Star Wars weekend. So they figure since it's a premium event almost, they'll charge premium prices. I mean, if it was something that was there all the time, they probably couldn't quite get away with $48. It'd probably be more like, you know, $37.99. Yeah. Still outrageous, but not $50 for breakfast.
But I think that is probably what will happen eventually.
And that's fine.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, a character breakfast with Chewbacca and C-3PO and Boba Fett. I mean, people would eat that up. It'd be great. I don't have a problem with that at all. Just and we've talked about character breakfast all the time. As much as I think it's a great concept, I wouldn't go. So, because it's just too much money and they're just not that good. But
well, I mean, there's a big difference between this and the one at the Tusker House where you meet the Safari Mickey and stuff. That's in the 20s. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but I mean, that's half the price of this.
But still, coming to $30 for breakfast is a lot of money.
Expensive. Absolutely expensive, but makes it seem cheap, though, with the $48 for Boba Fett.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Is that it for the world news?
That is it.
All right, we're going to take our final break. Be back with your questions in just a second on Radio Harambe.
Hi, Explorer Mickey here. Did you know there are only a few thousand great green macaws left in the wild? There are such beautiful birds, but people are causing them to disappear. But we can help. The ARA Project works to save the habitats for lots of different kinds of macaws. They also help rescue birds and even hatch baby chicks to keep the population growing. So we need to help them do all of that good stuff by going to the araproject.org and making a donation. Every little bit counts.
Welcome back once again to Radio Harambe. It is time for our feature section. And Mike, really only a couple days ago, we put out a call for folks to help us out with some listener questions so we can basically turn this show over to you and talk about the things you guys are curious about and want to know about. And in return, we were going to give away a Buradika Band CD, also known as Wasalu. Their new CD is out now, and I have a stack of them to give away. We've already given away four or five already, and we were going to give away one here, but we got such big response, we're going to give away two of these, and we're going to do our absolute best to try to answer every single one of these questions, which means that I think we have a topic for Radio Harambe's feature section for the next few weeks. Because we really did get just a mess of them. I mean, just a unending array of questions, and they're all great. So what I thought we'd do tonight is do some of the quick hit ones, some of the ones where it doesn't take a whole lot of sort of conceptualizing on our part to answer, mostly trivia and things like that, short opinion things. And we'll try to get through as many of them as we can now. And whatever we don't get through, we'll do to the next show. And I know that, Mike, you've singled out even two or three of these for their own show in their entirety, correct?
Right. Definitely.
So we will do that. I'm going to probably butcher their Twitter handles here as I read these. So, Mike, if you want to try to help me out with that, you're welcome to. The first one we're going to do is probably the most apropos. It is at AROTHWDWC.
Yep.
Okay. He asks, Buradika has a CD where can I get this? Unfortunately, Buridika's CD is not available online as of yet. Their management has assured me that they are working towards that goal of having it available on iTunes and maybe on Amazon as well. For those of you who are not in the sort of on that end of the business, as I am, what you probably don't know is that those outlets, iTunes and Amazon, do charge hefty fee for the selling of their CDs. And there is quite a cost involved in a lot of these CDs. So it may be a little while before they're able really to offer those online options for buyers. But as of right now, other than winning here today, I believe you can buy this at the Mombasa Marketplace. At least that's what I've been told. I haven't seen it myself yet.
Right.
But I have been told that you can buy it there. So if you are in the park or you know somebody who's going to the park, certainly have them look for you. And if you go to our blog on johnboeveryone.com, you can see a picture. If you search Buridika, you'll certainly see a picture of what the CD looks like and the songs that are on there. We do plan on featuring that CD on a show in the future. I'm trying my best to get one of the members of the band to come on the show as well if we can. Obviously, they're very busy. But that is the answer to that question. So let's go on to the next one. And maybe you can help me with this one. At Scott Quayle?
Sure. Okay. Yes.
He writes, yep. How many pre-shows are there for the Bird Show? Which I'm assuming he means Flights of Wonder.
Yeah, what else would he mean?
I don't know. I've never seen the same one twice.
Well, do you know what the pre-show is, right?
I do know what the pre-show is, yeah. And I think I know the answer to this, but what is your take on this?
Well, I mean, it depends on... I mean, they bring out different birds all the time, so I'm not sure if there's really a set number of different pre-shows. I've seen owls, I've seen toucans.
Yep.
It just depends on what they want to bring out, really.
I've seen hawks.
Right, yep. I think I've even seen, like, a parrot once.
One time I saw parrots or a macaw, a pair of them, flying as part of the pre-show, flying down the pathway from where Africa is towards the theater. And that was part of the show. They actually kind of soared over the tops of your heads and landed up on the top of the theater.
We need to go back to doing that.
This was the last time I was there.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So sometimes you get lucky. You find this group, these two parrots who I don't. They had names, of course. They always have names. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I don't think that there is any set amount. I think it's whatever they're working with this time around.
Right.
Because now the parrots are a coordinated thing that takes some effort, but usually they just sort of bring an animal out there and maybe a bird out there, and maybe it flies from one handler to another, and that's really it.
Yeah, so. I mean, they generally just sort of talk about it for a little bit, just sort of. It's really a way to sort of gather people. Hey, there's something going on over here. So they go over there and then enter the theater. Yeah,
exactly. Our next question is from at Master Gracie. Can't believe somebody actually managed to grab that Twitter handle. There was a bloody elephant carcass on the Kilimanjaro safaris during cast previews. Did it get pulled before guests ever saw it? I don't think it did. I think it actually went to guests for a little while.
Very little while. I mean, it was very, very brief. They pulled it way before I ever got there, a couple months after the park opened.
Right.
It was long gone by the time I got there. But yeah, they quickly pulled that. I mean, you know, the powers that be said, you know, we cannot have this. This is, I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's one thing to have a conservation message. It's another one to have a butchered mama elephant at the end of the ride. So, you know, this has got to go.
It was a little graphic from what, and I've seen pictures posted over the years. And yes, it's a little graphic, but yeah, powerful.
If it lasted a couple of weeks, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, not much more than that. Our next one comes from at Mouse Slap.
Ah, Jonathan, yes.
Okay, well, I don't know what the slap means, but let's go with there. He asks, does the Animal Kingdom have an equivalent to the windows on Main Street? Now, just a quick background. The windows on Main Street are, if you don't know this, if you look up as you're walking down Main Street USA, there are names on all the windows, and they're all associated with different, local businesses. The names are actually sort of what you would consider the credits for the show. They are, everybody involved with sort of the building, the operations, the evolution of Walt Disney World. Not just Walt and Roy and, Tony Baxter and people like that, but also all sorts of other things, all sorts of other people involved, including Walt's father is on there. Mike, I think I would answer the question like this. Every single one of the parks has what we would call credited secret credits for people involved in the creation of this. Right. But I think only the Magic Kingdom does it so overtly.
Correct. That's true. I mean, the ones in the thing that immediately popped to my mind when I saw this question was the posters in Harambe, where you have the Joe Rohde beads and masks. You have the reference to the architect at Mombasa Marketplace, Jafari. And there's a couple of them there. John Shields is referenced. He was a big influence in the early days of the park, and there's a Shields and weaponry store that's right next to Joe Rohde's. That's a sort of a homage to him. There's a couple of them like that take place in the posters, but that's the one that immediately sprung to my mind.
Right. So I would say that there isn't an equivalent, but there is sort of the same idea, just sort of spread out along. Everywhere throughout the park.
Yeah, it's not as elaborate as the the Main Street ones. I mean, those are real.
And not as in-depth, not as, inclusive. There's not as many people credited.
Yeah, instead of, I kind of look at the Main Street windows as almost like a tribute to each one of those people.
Right.
The other things, like the things we're talking about, it's just sort of like a wink to those people, like a little touch.
I'm waiting for the day when Joe Rohde gets his window on Main Street.
Yeah, right.
Which he should have. At Plus the Magic writes, have you ever been to the Animal Kingdom late at night? And then he writes, just to kind of define that. Post Everest Challenge party goes into 2 a.m. Not sure what to expect. I would say, and I think Mike, I don't know if you have any more experience. I'd say, yes, I've been there late at night, but never that late.
Yeah, no, never that late. I've been there at, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, even for extra magic hours at night.
Yeah.
It's a dark, mysterious place. I love it at night. I don't know what they would possibly have open at 2 o'clock in the morning, other than just whatever party they're throwing for the expedition.
Right.
Everest, challenge people. So, I mean, if they're running Everest, that'd be awesome. Ride it. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, as Mike was saying, it's a very dark, very atmospheric place. It really gives you the idea of traipsing through the jungle in the middle of the night. I mean, it's, you're just barely seeing what's in front of you in some of these places, and that's really what they're going for. If Dino Land happens to be open, shoot over there. That's really cool at night. The lights in the rest of Asia are fantastic, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's really worth seeing at night as well. So, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine, like Mike saying, I would imagine it would be, specific to this particular party of what would actually be open. Okay. DJF on the blog. For those of us who don't Twitter and do the old fashioned things like blogging and Facebook and such.
That's Annie Clarf.
Right. DJF writes, my brother and his family just got back and thoroughly enjoyed the Wilderness Adventure program at Disney's Animal Kingdom, but they would have loved it if the merit badges would have been true patches instead of paper. Has anyone heard if Disney is contemplating adding these to their gift merchandising or expanding this program?
That's actually not Annie Clarf. I was thinking of somebody else. That was from the blog, right?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
No, they're never going to do that.
Well, we certainly have not heard anything about that. Why would you say never? It's just don't think it's.
Well, I mean, stickers are a lot cheaper than. I mean, I'm being realistic. I mean, they're not gonna.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose, I guess you could maybe, if, I mean, if this was like a super popular thing and they could maybe get away with selling the real patches, maybe they would do that. But they're certainly not going to give them away.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, instead of adding it to their gift merchandising, again, I don't think they would give it away, like Mike's saying, but they could certainly add it to the... you know, to the store or something, or offer you can get the sticker for free, or buy this for $5, or you know, 10, or however much they can think they can charge. Here's another. This is a great question, and this is one we're gonna have to give a little bit of time to. ASKEach at ASKEach writes, haven't been to the Animal Kingdom since 2003, returning in 166 days. Has much changed? And then the second part of the question is, are there crowds at the end of September? We'll quickly answer that one. And that is, the end of September tends to be a pretty slow time, not the slowest, as you're starting to get towards that October, you know, food and wine festival, things like that opening up. Things open up. But September is pretty dead, right?
It's a good time to go. It's a good like time you to said, go, yeah. You know, you're still going to want to avoid food and wine, but you know, on the weekends and all that kind of stuff, because all the locals come out. But it's a pretty good, you know, it's a pretty good time to go. Absolutely.
Now has much changed?
Two things spring immediately to mind.
Yeah.
One is obviously Everest, which opened in 2006.
Yeah.
And the other is Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Is now the stage show there.
Yeah. The other thing that comes out of my mind is Camp Minnie Mickey's no longer there.
That's true. When did now the Dino-Rama, Primeval World, and all that kind of stuff, when did that open?
That was before that. Yep, that was before that. But okay. Yak and Yeti is new since then.
That's true. Yep, Yak and Yeti. I forgot about that one, yeah.
And also, Kidani Village is new since then. So you have many more options to stay at the Animal Kingdom Lodge if you want to.
Ensenada.
Yeah, Ensenada. So... there is actually quite a bit has changed since 2003, although aesthetically, nothing big other than Everest.
Yeah, Everest is the big one.
Yeah.
Everest is obviously the big one.
Now, this is a great question, Mike. This comes from at Tay underscore Elizabeth 94. Is it stupid to say underscore? I have no idea. Can you reveal a fact that a lot of people do not know about the Animal Kingdom? Now I'm gonna put this hand in hand with somebody wrote is it at 20 what is this A-Tigs?
Oh yeah, Alexandra.
Okay,
yeah.
A-Tigs also writes. I mean, this is kind of similar. What are the Animal Kingdom's top three Disney plan secrets? Like Imagineer hidden secrets. She writes things that are not known by the regular Disney visitors. Those kind of go hand in hand. Why don't you give what's a couple that come to your mind?
Well, the first one that brought to my mind was one that actually, I think, blew your mind when I said it way back when in one of the early shows. And that was, and I'll bring it back up now, is that the Animal Kingdom is the only theme park that has doors to all the bathrooms. And that's because if a tiger or something gets out, they have to have plenty of space to lock people in. So all of those bathrooms, as well as things like the Tusker House and the Yak and Yeti, are designed to lock people in case of a breakout from, you know, tiger getting out of the its exhibit or whatnot.
Into the garbage chute, Flyboy.
Exactly. That was the first thing that came to my mind, or like a little secret that nobody really would know.
The first thing that came to my mind was, and then this is Imagineer Hidden Secrets, is that this is such a big question to answer because it's really almost impossible to just answer the question because the Animal Kingdom is, to me, the single most well thought out and story laden, you know, theme park that they've ever done. I mean, that's what makes Joe Rohde so great. And the backstories that are behind these different areas, and Mike has written about, certainly we mentioned Harambe. I know you've written a backstory about Dinoland.
I just put one out about two articles about Restaurantosaurus.
I mean, go to the blog, look these things up. When you start reading the backstories behind this, you are going to find literally more hidden secrets than you could ever possibly have thought were there.
I got another good one for you.
Yeah.
When you were on Kilimanjaro safaris, you go past, you know, a couple of the animals right off the bat, like the hippos and the crocodiles. You then go to where they have the tusks digging out on the side in the red clay pits.
Yeah.
If you look over above you, there's actually a bridge there. What people don't know is that's actually how the elephants get in and out of their exhibit. And it is perhaps the only elephant bridge in the whole wide world.
I believe it is the only elephant bridge in the whole wide world. One thing I would come to is if you are a plant person, if you're a gardener, if you're into flowers and things like that, there are literally hundreds of species of plants in Animal Kingdom, and most of them have been put there on purpose. And if you look at something and you don't quite know what it is and you want to know, you can actually ask a cast member for what they call "What's That Plant" card. It's a little card that you write in where you saw this plant, describe kind of what it looks like, you send it in, and they send it back to you with an answer.
Yeah, that is a cool little thing.
Nobody knows about that unless you go on a tour or one of those kind of things.
Speaking of plants.
Yeah.
I believe there is only one actual baobab tree in the Animal Kingdom, even though there is a lot of them on the safari.
Yes,
they're all fake.
Yep, there is only one. Yep.
And that's right by Kusafiri.
And it doesn't look like a baobab tree.
No, it doesn't look anything like it.
Because it's not old enough yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, there's tons of them. I mean, we could do this all day. So really what I would say is, you know, peruse, shameless plug, go to jomboeveryone.com, look at the blog section, peruse the backstory things, look at the keywords for stuff like Imagineering and history and things like that. And once you start reading about the backstories to these different areas, you are going to be absolutely blown away by all the different things that are in there. Africa alone, you could spend hours looking at all the different architectural details, all the different historical details, and the things like that are put in there. It is absolutely amazing. If you don't want to do it that way, take the Wild by Design tour. And that will give you everything you need to know. It'll certainly give you a primer and get you started in the right direction. The other kind of secret, Mike, that I came to that I thought of before we move on is the actual photograph of Chester and Hester.
Oh, and right next to them is the first dollar bill they ever made.
That's right. But you're going to have to find that on your own, folks. We're not going to tell you where that is. Let's move along. At Drunk at Disney. I don't know anybody who's been drunk at Disney, but apparently this guy has been.
I've met him, and he is.
He writes a question that we've answered a million times, which we answered earlier, but it certainly bears repeating. How sweet does the new Festival of the Lion King area look? And I think, Mike, up until now, we really couldn't answer it. Now we can.
Yeah, it looks very sweet so far. We'll see.
Yeah, this is starting to get exciting.
Yeah, it looks good.
At DJ Fob?
That's Andy Clark.
Okay. Is it Fob?
I don't know.
DJ Phob. How about this? Which would you rather see at the Animal Kingdom? An Arctic area or an ocean area? Mm-hmm. You want to go first?
They're both done at SeaWorld.
That was what I thought of, too.
I am going to say ocean. I don't want, you know, although there is also the living seas, so that kind of...
That's what I said. Yep.
I'll say ocean. I'd like to see some, at least some ocean animals like sea lions and things like that. I think would be fun to watch and things, you know, stuff like that. But so that's what I'll pick.
And I will pick the opposite. I'll say an Arctic area. If we're just talking about either pole, I am a absolute sucker for a polar bear. I'm very impressed by them. And if they could do an Arctic area that includes polar bears or penguins, the big ones. That would be really cool. So I'd actually pick the Arctic area. However, I think both of us would probably choose something else.
Yeah, probably. But
we're not going to get to that.
The one reason I would pick the ocean area is because you can actually shoehorn in there somehow a redone 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride.
And it also goes with you could also put it into the Finding Nemo, the musical area.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You already have sort of the genesis of an ocean theme with that big item there. So I understand that. The next question comes from @CWEIRICK.
Okay.
Okay. Don't know who that is. Mike would know better than me. As you're probably learning, folks, I don't really use the Twitter very often. This person writes, is Animal Kingdom too focused on Africa, Asia? It's kind of shoehorns with the last question. How about an American section? Black bears, bison, wolves, mountain goats, etc. Along with that, Scott Campbell, a friend of the show, also writes, what animals would you like to see added to the park and in what capacity? So let's put those kind of both together. Mike, I know you've mentioned a few times North American pavilion or area would be something you'd be interested in.
But yeah, and this has actually been fairly heavily rumored that there would be an North America section, and the animal that would sort of, I don't know what the right term would be, but be kind of like the star of the trail would be the grizzly bear. Just like the tiger is kind of the star of the Maharaj Jungle Trek, and the gorillas are kind of like the main attraction of the Pangani, and this would be grizzly bears. And oddly, the Animal Kingdom doesn't have a single type of bear. Right. So I could see that. And then you plug around, some birds and, what have you, Mexican wolves or otters and things of that nature. But it would be focused around grizzly bears. I've heard that in the past. That was, seriously considered.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I would certainly be for that. We've spoken many, many times about how we would love to see, an animal section, a new area with animals in mind, brought into the park. Mike's mentioned Australia a bunch of times. We've always discussed this. The Galapagos would be great. I mean, right. there's a whole lot of possibilities here.
And much like Africa and Asia, the North America section obviously has already ready-made Disney films that you can tie in there. The two that obviously pop into my head are Bambi and Pocahontas.
Correct. What about Scott's question about what animals would you like to see added to the park and in what capacity?
What I would pick would be a animal trail in Shirkazang that would have red pandas, that would have clouded leopards, which are beautiful animals.
Really cool.
Could have some. I would have a pheasantry, which there's numerous kinds of beautiful pheasants from that area where you can have almost like their own aviary, just like you have in the other ones. That would be my choice.
Yeah, and I've made no mistake about what I would pick, which would be giant pandas. Going into Asia would be great. In the area between Everest and Cali River Rapids would be perfect for a big themed panda area. I've mentioned that a bunch of times. Other than that, if I were to do something that would be a sort of larger thing, I do like sort of the northern North America animals. I do like the idea of polar bears and grizzly bears and wolves and bison and those kind of things would be terrific. So there's a lot of possibilities. I couldn't answer that in one, but if he was going to make me say one, it would be pandas, which brings me right into the next question, which comes from
Lightman Hyde.
There you go. Thank you very much. See, you've read these 1,000 times.
I know Lightman Hyde, and
I do too. But I just never. I don't. I look at what their names are, not their Twitter handles. That's the problem.
It's a big Thunder Mountain.
I get it. I
reference. I was telling the people in case I know you know, but not everybody knows. So yeah.
The question is: pandas, a working Yeti, or Avatar? What would you like to see most?
That's so tough.
That is tough. Well, I would, after all the blustering over the pandas that I've done over the years, I would probably say restoring that Yeti to what it once was would be something I would really, really love. Because yeah. I did get a chance to see it multiple times. When I first went there, I probably rode the thing 10 times in 3 days. And it was mind-blowingly cool. And I would love that to be back. Because it is a showstopper. And I would love to see that the most. Pandas is a close second, but I think that just for nostalgia's sake, for something that I know is great, I would like to see the Yeti.
So you, Mr. Avatar Land, are putting Avatar third.
Absolutely. Of those three choices, absolutely. And I've said from the beginning, Avatar is I'm excited about the concept. I like what I'm seeing here for what might be happening, but it certainly would not have been my first choice or investment. But
what does a working Yeti really do, though?
Did you see the Yeti?
Yes, of course I did. And it was great. It was great. And I know it's almost sort of the... how do I put this? It's sort of like the black sheep of the animal kingdom right now. Like, yeah. People are like, oh, that stupid Yeti doesn't work anymore. You know, it's almost like the joke of the animal kingdom. Right. So I understand that. But in reality, it's 2 seconds of the ride, not even.
It's two great seconds.
It's still a great ride. It's still a great themed attraction. It's still terrific, even if it doesn't work. The other things we're talking about are adding things to do in the park.
Yeah, I understand. So it sounds like you're going with Avatar.
No, I'm picking Yeti because I don't really care about the Avatar thing. I'm just shocked that you did, to be honest.
When I first saw that the Yeti and the whole thing, my first experience on Expedition Everest was really, you know, one of the great defining moments of my experiences in Walt Disney World. That was just one of the great things. I mean, that just whole thing from the minute you entered the queue to the time you got off that train was just mind-blowing, you know?
Oh, it's terrific. Terrific. I don't understand why they don't change the Stacey Must-Do thing to show a non-working Yeti, because you get all these people excited to see the Yeti jumping around.
I don't know why they do that either. I never will understand that. At Alt Disney Fan 28, do you guys think Disney should do more of a tie-in to the Disney Nature series in the parks? That's a great question. I don't know how they would do it any more than they really have.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was a great question too, and I can't think of how they would do it unless they did something at Rafiki's Planet Watch.
Yeah.
That was more permanent with the most recent Disney Nature movie. Maybe like a small clip about, you know, like they would maybe do they do show movies there. You know, maybe they would show some scenes from it to teach you about,
right,
you know, the national park system in America. And the last one about the cats, maybe, you know, to direct your attention to some of the people at the grassroots level at the, you know, working with cats in Africa or something like that, maybe.
Right.
But it's hard to think of any other way to do it. I mean, but short of building a theater so they can actually show them all the time.
Yeah. So I guess my answer to the question would be yes. I just, he doesn't ask how would we do it. He only says, do I think they should? Yeah, they probably should. I just don't know how they will. Other than what they've already done, which is, like we were mentioning, the Party for the Planet thing. They always have sort of a celebration because the Disney Nature films all come out on the same day, all come out on Earth Day, and we all celebrate on Earth Day at the Animal Kingdom. So, you know, there's that tie-in, doing, you know, like a premiere there or something like that, if that's even possible. I don't know.
And they usually show, don't they usually have a billboard for the most recent one on the Rafiki train? They usually have that for going too.
Yeah, I mean, there is other ways they can stick it in. I just don't really know exactly how. At JK Disney Hip, if you follow at JK Disney Hip, I am now encouraging you all to unfollow.
Don't do that. That?
JK Disney Hip is Jamie from the Disney Hipsters, who always fails to mention the fact that I am involved in this podcast, only ever seems to mention Mike's name.
I can't help it if I'm more beloved than you, Dave.
I understand, and that goes back to my problem with the Twitter. So, never mind. Don't unfollow Jamie. There's enough people trying to encourage folks to unfollow Jamie. I don't need to jump on that bandwagon. She asks a really, really cool question. You think that they should take away all the bags from Animal Kingdom? When you purchase something, you have to bring your own recycled bag or pay $3 to purchase a recycled bag. Now, this goes back, Mike, to the whole no straws and things like that.
It's a great idea.
I just don't think it'll happen.
I don't see how they could pull it off with so many people buying merchandise. First of all, they're never going to try to discourage people from buying merchandise. So they're never going to do it just right. From a business point of view.
Right.
But just from a logistics point of view, it would be very hard to do that. You know, maybe they could start only using recycled plastic, and they already do that. I don't even know.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff, or encourage people who already have a bag. Maybe, you know, put up signs that say, "Hey, if you already have a bag, can we put this in the bag that you have?" You know, something along those lines, so they use less bags. I could see that maybe, but I don't see them not allowing bags or charging you for the bags.
I agree.
Charge you for everything else.
I love the spirit of the question. I really do. I just don't see how they can pull it off. I agree that would be great, and then encourage people to stick that bag in their backpack as they go along to other parks. And use it there, and maybe if you do use it there, you get a dollar off or something. I don't know. You know, there's definitely possibilities in here. I just don't think there's anybody out there in the company who is thinking along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, don't unfollow J.K. Disney. We like her. Here's a question. I'm sorry.
She likes me, maybe not you.
Well, that's definitely a possibility. I can't vouch for that. Here is another question from Scott Quayle. I believe we asked a question of his before.
He did.
I did, but I love this question. He asked, do you think that, given today's business atmosphere, an attraction like the Safari Ride would be created today due to its size? And again, the Safari Ride itself is the largest attraction on property. You can fit, I think, the entire Magic Kingdom inside of it. It is huge. And that is a great question, Mike.
I think the answer is probably no.
Probably not.
If they were going to build the Animal Kingdom today, first of all, they probably wouldn't. They would build a Star Wars park or a, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, if they were contemplating their fourth park today, it probably would not be Animal Kingdom. But if it was, it probably wouldn't do a Safari Ride.
I would tend to agree. It's a huge investment. It is a marquee attraction, but it is not something that sells a lot of plush items or lends itself to movies or... You know, all the things that we've really seen that has happened, you know, since then. The Animal Kingdom kind of came out at the end of the very creative period of Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
that's hurrah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the sort of great creative period before everything kind of turned into this, well, part of it has to do with the economic scene in the coming years. Which has a lot to do with this sort of stalled development of the park in its opening years as well. So we can get into a lot of aspects of this, but I would agree. I would think that it probably wouldn't be built.
I would think not. Yeah, not in today's day and age. Not with Eisner pushing it and having such control over the stockholders and stuff. Yeah, I don't think so.
And let's do one last one, Mike, for this show.
Okay.
Actually, it's two questions. Comes from Flannel Jedi. At Flannel Jedi. Great, great handle. Two questions. The first one, what is your favorite music loop in the park?
Ooh. Oh, man. I guess it would have to be the Oasis, the one that you can actually buy
on CD.
That's a good one.
I like the Mombasa Marketplace one.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's good, too. That's good.
If I have to pick in the park. If not, I would pick the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, Animal Kingdom Lodge is a great one.
Yep.
If you go on the Disney Hipsters YouTube page, you can listen to all of them. They did a great job of putting them all together. That's a good one.
I would go with those two. I like those. And the other question was, Safari, better or worse without the poacher Big Red storyline?
Better without it.
Better without it. Interesting.
Yeah. Better without it.
You know, I kind of feared the loss of the conservation message, but I think it was seamless. I think they did okay. I think as much as I like the idea of preaching conservation, especially preaching the critical nature that some of these animals find themselves in now, I am actually of the opinion that seeing these animals and learning each one of them faces certain struggles is just as powerful as creating a storyline that after you see it the first time is really no longer, registers with the average visitor.
Yeah, it got kind of, you're right, it got old, but also I don't think it really ever really worked the way they wanted it to work. It really, I don't know, I don't know if people really got a strong message. Oh boy, we have to really say the elephants. After that, there's a much better, seeing the elephants, like you said, brought that home a lot more than anybody else. No, more than the storyline at the end. And it got old. It got old.
Yeah. Well, Mike,
I miss Ward Wilson, though. I do miss the chiming in for Ward. I thought that's something that I missed.
And they could incorporate that regardless.
Right.
If they wanted to. But anyway, we've gone through maybe a third of the questions that we have received. And I think we've probably done enough for today. We will get to the rest of or more of them next time. And then, like I said, we have a whole bunch planned for the future. So I think that's it for us now, Mike. Unless you have any that you think of that you really wanted to get off your chest in this particular show.
No, we can move on.
Okay, so let's leave it there. Don't forget to find us at Mike is at Jombo, everyone. I am on the Twitter at Radio Harambe. I do check that occasionally. I don't tweet a lot, but if you do message me there, I promise you I will return those messages. I do occasionally chirp back at people when the time comes. But if nothing else, all the new blog postings and things like that I put on there as well. We'd like to also point you to our conservation page. Go to jomboeveryone.com, click the conservation page. You can learn how you can help out animals that are help out organizations that are on the ground helping animals, saving them from extinction every day. We also have our store there. We have our Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. All the profits we make off everything we sell are going to go straight to those conservation partners you find on the conservation page. Any other plugs I'm missing?
Nope. Go right ahead.
So, for Safari Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwaherini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Kwaku walukwa melako na kungulu na utukupu atame.